Well, it may be difficult to access Wikipedia today, but it's not impossible. Here with some Wikipedia workarounds is Brian Cooley, the editor at CNET. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you, Robert.
And first, I want you to tell us some different ways to get around the Wikipedia blackout today.
Well, one of the easiest ways is to go search for the Wikipedia page you want on Google. And look for the result on Google that says Wikipedia and then the subject you're looking for. It's usually one of the first few results.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you mouse over that or just put your cursor over it, you're going to find a little double arrow box opens just to the right of the search result. And then just to the right of that, you're going to see a little mini version of the Wikipedia page you're trying to get to. Right above that is a little text link that says cached copy mm-hmm. or cached. And you go to that. And that's one that Google has. So you're not actually going to Wikipedia, but you're finding a fairly fresh copy of that same page from Wikipedia that Google has squirreled away on their servers, because that's just kind of how Google runs. They cache things so they can more easily serve them to you. Now, if you're concerned that that page is stale, which it might be, that cached copy on Google is going to have a freshness date at the top, if you will, that'll say when they captured it, when Google captured that copy of it. And so you can see if it's a day old, a few days old, a few hours old, and make a judgment that way.
Now, that's a much more elegant workaround than mine, which was to go to a foreign language site of Wikipedia, preferably a language I understand, but I tried Danish just for fun, which I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Search for Mitt Romney in the Danish Wikipedia. Then copy the answer into Google Translate from Danish to English, and there, you know, minus some odd bits of grammar, there it is.
Yes, it could make for either a Mad Lib or kind of a laborious end around, if you will. But that is another way to do it. It's important to point out that the Wikipedia version that is down has been the English version, not the others, because this is very much about getting in front of the U.S. internet audience and getting them to realize what's happening in their legislature that could affect our relationship with internet media around the world.
Other sites have also shown solidarity and shut down their sites today. Have they had more luck fully blocking their content than Wikipedia has?
Yeah, Wikipedia is kind of a tough one to block because of this Google caching, because of the different language versions that you point out. It's a very broadly distributed site. Also down today are Reddit, which is a popular web page recommendation service. You'll often see their buttons on web pages so you can let folks know, I read this and I recommend it. Also the Cheeseburger Network, which does the I Can Has Cheeseburger Cat Photos. So everything from the rather robust, like Wikipedia, down to the silly. But notice that all of these have one thing in common. They're all highly trafficked. But Wikipedia has been the one that I think is getting the most attention because people are hungry for a workaround. I mean, you can just imagine millions of students out there today having to actually find another place to get their research.
Well, Brian Cooley, thanks a lot for talking with us about it today.
Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it.
Brian Cooley, editor-at-large for the tech news site CNET.
Here in Southern California, the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach are the busiest in the nation. They also have some of the dirtiest air. Thousands of cargo trucks pass through each day. But Chrissy Clark from member station KQED reports that this month marks a new era of cleaner air.
A common trope in environmental stories is to put things in terms of jobs versus the environment. But that's not what happened in this case. Pretty much everyone I spoke to wanted to make that very clear, including a trucker named Pedro Melendez. He's starting the engine of his shiny new big rig, which he drives for a living, score one for jobs. He uses it to haul containers of stuff made in China from the ports out to warehouses, where they're sent to stores and sold to us. As his truck warms up, Melendez points to the exhaust pipe. Instead of black diesel smoke, there's nothing.
Nothing. It's 100% clean energy.
Score one for the environment. The truck runs on liquid natural gas. Melendez bought it with help from a grant thanks to the Clean Truck Program, sponsored by the ports of L.A. and Long Beach. Over the last few years, the ports have offered incentives to purchase new, clean trucks while phasing out older, dirty ones. And since the first of this year, trucks that don't meet 2007 EPA emission standards are altogether banned.
The trucks here at the port now meet the strictest clean air and safety standards of any major port in the world.
L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa was key in developing the program and recently threw a little celebration for it at the Port of L.A.
We figured out a way to do both, to clean our environment, to grow good jobs,
The Clean Trucks program has replaced more than 10,000 old trucks, and emissions at the ports have dropped nearly in half. David Pettit of the Natural Resources Defense Council says without so much diesel soot and ash clogging the air, communities will be healthier.
The challenge here was to clean up what's often called the diesel death zone, a bullseye of increase in cancer risk right here at the ports, and then it kind of creeps out along the truck routes, and it was a serious public health problem.
And a personal health problem for Kimberly Melendez, the 15-year-old daughter of trucker Pedro Melendez. They live just a couple miles from the ports, and the diesel exhaust aggravated her childhood asthma. But since the Clean Truck program got underway,
the air is way more cleaner than how it used to be. The smog isn't as dark.
I want a clean air. I want a clean air for myself. I want a clean air for my family.
Shannon Bell is another truck driver. I met him at a taco stand right outside the port. He lives nearby. His son has asthma. And he's happy about the cleaner air, too.
At the same time, you know, I didn't suspect that the truckers would end up paying the cost.
Because, Bell says, all those new cleaner trucks,
they cost anywhere from $100,000 to $180,000, you know.
And how much did your last truck cost?
$17,000. $17,000.
Like a lot of truck drivers, Bell had paid off his old truck years ago. To replace it with a new one, he took out a big loan and took on payments of $1,300 a month. And then there's the maintenance of these high-tech trucks. It costs a lot more. Because the trucking company Bell worked for considered him an independent truck driver, he's had to cover all this.
I mean, I've been working my butt off all this time, and I have basically nothing to show for it.
After a complicated legal battle, a plan that would have shifted the costs of the new rigs from individual truckers to trucking companies failed in court. And while Bell isn't ready to blame his money troubles on the move to clean up port air, he says the effort has come at a cost. The question is, who should shoulder it? For NPR News, I'm Chrissy Clark in Los Angeles.
Mitt Romney is not the first very rich man to seek public office. The Kennedys were rich. Nelson Rockefeller was rich. Michael Bloomberg is very rich. Pennsylvania Senator John Hines was very rich. And when his widow married John Kerry, he became rich. But unlike those men, Mitt Romney seems to have stubbed his toe verbally time after time when the subject was money, wealth, or work.
Rick, I'll tell you what. $10,000? $10,000 bet?
I was happy that he had to take a mortgage out on his house to ultimately defeat me.
Corporations are people, my friend. The country already has a leader who divides us with the bitter politics of envy.
I think it's fine to talk about those things in quiet rooms.
I know what it's like to worry whether you're going to get fired. There were a couple of times I wondered whether I was going to get a pink slip.
I like being able to fire people who provide services to me.
What's the effective rate I've been paying? Well, it's probably closer to the 15% rate. And then I get speaker's fees from time to time, but not very much.
Those speaking fees actually amount to more than $370,000. All of this has made me wonder, is Mitt Romney unusually awkward in the matter of being extremely rich and incredibly public? Or are the questions tougher these days for multimillionaires who seek public office? Well, Robert Frank covers wealth for the Wall Street Journal. He's written two books about the very rich, Richistan and now The High Beta Rich. Robert Frank, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
And what do you think is going on here? What do you make of these statements?
Well, I think the problem is not necessarily that he's very wealthy. He can overcome that. The problem is that his comments about money remind everyone how out of touch he is with the American people and their daily struggles. I mean, this comment yesterday where he said his speaking fees were, quote, not very much, and they were over $370,000. It kind of recalls this time when McCain was talking about he can't remember how many homes he owns, or when George Bush Sr. in 1992 was talking about how amazed he was to discover the supermarket scanner. I mean, these are issues that remind voters that these very privileged politicians are out of touch with the rest of America.
And yet, no one assumed that Nelson Rockefeller, who was a governor of New York State for many years, and John F. Kennedy, a very popular president, nobody thought that they were having trouble making ends meet every month.
No, we've had wealthy candidates in the past. The issue is that times have changed for wealthy candidates. The Occupy Wall Street movement, the Wall Street bailouts, the growing awareness of inequality has made the wealthy a real target. And in 2010, where there were congressional and gubernatorial elections, of the 58 wealthy candidates who helped finance their own campaigns, 80% lost those races. And I think that's a lot of the reason was that those candidates were spending a lot of the campaigns defending their wealth or their yachts or their mansions and not being able to focus on the real issues.
But here's what seems novel about the wealth of Mitt Romney and how he must talk about it. He was raised to wealth and comfort. His father was a rich auto executive and then the governor of Michigan. But he made this fortune at Bain Capital. He actually made it. He could say, this is the result of what I did. The problem is what he did, how he made that money.
Exactly. And I think what's changed in America is that Americans are focusing more on how the wealthy made their money. You know, we have a narrative of wealth that we like in America, which is you start out with nothing and you make a fortune by creating a popular product like the iPad or, in Herman Cain's case, a pizza chain. And they respect that wealth. Romney started out with some wealth and got wealthier through private equity, which is difficult to understand and easy to compare to corporate rating. So unfortunately, he's attracting more comparisons now to Gordon Gekko than to Steve Jobs. And it's really because his wealth is a result more of what people see as financial engineering rather than creating something of value to the economy.
So if you had made $200 million in private equity and you were running for president and people were always asking you about inequality and there were issues about raising taxes on the rich, what would you say? How would you handle that?
He needs to come out and give a speech. I call it the I'm rich and I'm proud speech. And he needs to come out and say, look, I was really lucky to be born in this country when I was and have a set of skills that was hugely rewarded in the marketplace. And he needs to say, what I want to do now is to make sure those opportunities are available to even more Americans and really focus on growth and how he can use his business experience to sort of turn around the government. I think the reason there's so much focus on his wealth is that he's really been trying to duck the issue and hide it.
And not very gracefully.
Exactly.
Well, Robert Frank, thanks a lot for talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Robert Frank covers wealth for the Wall Street Journal, and he's the author of the books Richistan and The High Beta Rich.
Our final story this hour is also about travel, but there's no tragedy, just a lot of pork. Last fall, 23-year-old Molly Boz traded in her job as a chef at a Michelin-starred French restaurant for a three-week road trip. She set out to learn all she could about American barbecue, and she brought her father along for the ride, professional photographer Doug Boz. The two of them documented their travels on a blog called Adventures in Barbecue, and they both joined us to explain why they took the journey.
I've always been, I guess you could say, ferociously obsessed with pork. I find the pig to be an incredible animal in terms of its versatility in the cooking world, and that's the world that I live in.
And Doug, what made you want to basically drop everything and go on this little adventure? I mean, I don't know if you even like barbecue.
Oh, I do. I do share her interest in pork. And although I have to say that I think up until that point, barbecue wasn't something that I was intensely interested in. But when your 23-year-old chef daughter asks you to go on a road trip with her, I think it took me maybe 3 or 4 seconds to answer, yes, I'm there.
So you guys decide that not only are you going to go on a little food tour, but this isn't just any foodie tour, right? You plan on learning from the experts, from the pitmasters. Molly, tell us, what is a pitmaster?
So a pitmaster is the man who tends the fire, generally speaking, in the back of the barbecue shack. He will be there from 2 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon shoveling coals into a fire and tending to whole hogs and pork shoulders all night.
And Doug, Molly got to work some of these pits, and I was wondering, since you've got the photographer's eye, if you could describe some of them, what they look like, or one that struck you in particular.
In North Carolina, we went to Allen and Sons, and were invited to come at whatever hour we wanted to, so we arrived at around 6:30 in the morning, and Keith Allen's pit is very dark. I think the only light in that room was the light of the fire itself. He would open the exterior doors in order to control the draft, in order to pull a lot of smoke out of the room or to allow it to collect. It was a very smoky environment.
Now, people feel pretty strongly about barbecue, and I'm wondering, by the end of the trip, what you learned about the different regions and what was your favorite, if you would deign to kind of come down on a particular side?
Personally, and I think I speak for myself and my father, I think that we pretty much hit the jackpot in Texas.
Without a doubt.
Truly, Texas blew our minds. I have never tasted a more delicious piece of unadulterated meat in my life.
And what are some of the regional differences? Like, what makes Texas barbecue, Texas barbecue?
Well, because Texas is cattle land, you see the appearance of beef in Texas as opposed to in North Carolina and South Carolina, where it's primarily pork. So beef brisket, beef sausage, also pork sausage, massive beef ribs. That's the kind of food that you find down there. And we went to one small town in Texas called Lockhart, which is supposedly the barbecue capital of Texas. And we ordered one sausage, known as a hot ring, and bit into the sausage, which was so juicy inside that as soon as you bit into it, it literally popped, and fat and juices from the meats were actually dripping down my arm. And it was so bursting with flavor and with moisture. I've never tasted a sausage like this before.
And the texture was unusual. It was coarsely ground.
Coarsely ground, yeah.
Now, forgive the pun, but of course I have a bone to pick with you guys. My favorite barbecue place is Rendezvous in Memphis. And I see you did not go to Kansas City, which some would think would render the whole trip moot.
Well, that's going to have to wait, I suppose, to part two.
We do plan on picking this trip up where we left off and hitting up all the spots that we weren't able to make it to. So fear not, Kansas City is in the near future.
Molly and Doug, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
That's Chef Molly Boz and her father, photographer Doug Boz. They spoke to us from NPR New York. They traveled more than 4,000 miles by car from New York to Texas and back to learn about regional variations in American barbecue. They documented their journey on the blog Adventures in Barbecue. You can find a link to that blog and see photos from their trip on our website, npr.org.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Siegel. If you tried to visit a Wikipedia content page today, you were likely disappointed. The online encyclopedia joined dozens of other websites in a blackout to protest legislation pending in Congress that critics say will censor the Internet. That legislation appears to be losing support on Capitol Hill. More on that in a moment. But first, NPR's Laura Seidel reports on the blackout.
It was a hard day for Patrice James. She does social media for a marketing firm, and her job involves a lot of research about people and companies. Today, she understood the importance of Wikipedia in her life.
I didn't realize how much I use it until it's gone, and that's usually the case with most things. And I'm like, wow, it adds extra work.
But the one entry that was visible on Wikipedia today told its readers that Congress was considering legislation that would block access to any foreign site that offered unauthorized files of movies, music, and TV shows and other intellectual property. James got the message.
I'm all for them trying to lower piracy, but to censor people, their thoughts, it's reminding me of 1984, actually.
Though James lives in Canada, she says she's upset because the legislation will target websites outside of the U.S. and it will force search engines to block links to them.
Stop SOPA! Pass on PIPA!
But hundreds of protesters today were in front of the New York City offices of Senators Charles Schumer and Kirsten Gillibrand. Both co-sponsored legislation known as the Protect Intellectual Property Act, or PIPA. The acronym for the House legislation is SOPA, or Stop Online Piracy Act. Among the speakers at the demonstration was NYU professor and author Clay Shirky. He pointed out that big money from Hollywood and traditional media companies have spent millions of dollars lobbying for the bill because Shirky contends they don't want to spend money suing websites.
You have to accuse them of something and then you have to prove the accusation, and that takes a long time and that takes a lot of money. And you can see why traditional media industries wouldn't want to take on that hassle.
But those same industries do have a long history of lobbying Congress. Ray Ramsey, the president and CEO of TechNet, a nonpartisan lobbying group for the tech industry in D.C., says Silicon Valley techies have generally tried to avoid Washington.
They're cut out of a cloth which is very
entrepreneurial, sometimes individual, sometimes libertarian. It's not a regulated industry like many other industries, and it is learning how to play in Washington.
Today's protest surely shows an awakening of the industry as to how it can flex its muscles. Along with Wikipedia, such other smaller but popular sites like Reddit and Boing Boing also blacked out. Former Senator Christopher Dodd, who now heads the Motion Picture Association of America, called today's demonstration childish.
It sort of reminds me of kids when they can't get their way, hold their breath or start screaming. Instead of engaging with the debate and providing information, encouraging a discussion of how this can be improved, it just seems petulant to me.
Dodd says people should be talking about all the jobs being lost in the entertainment industry because of piracy. For her part, Wikipedia user Patrice James says she's getting the point, though she's going to need a drink by the end of the day.
I'm going to need a couple of them to get me through this day.
Laura Seidel, NPR News.